What a Carve-Up by Jonathan Coe. Adapted by David Nobbs. Episode 1.
It all began on a train to Sheffield. There was this brunette sitting opposite me, tall, slim, with a strikingly attractive, if faintly equine, face. But the really exciting thing was that she was reading my book, with my name, Michael Pierce, on the front cover, and my photograph on the back.
Would you like a cough, sweet?
No, I'm fine, thanks, really. Oh, that book you're reading.
What about it?
Well, do you notice anything about the photograph on the back?
No, I... Well, I'll be! It's you! And there you are, just sitting there. I mean, this is incredible. I'm a huge fan of yours. I've read all your books.
Yeah, both of them?
Both of them, exactly. Well, I mean, I read the first one and I'm reading this. And I'm enjoying it. Hugely.
Oh, marvellous. This is every writer's dream.
And every publisher's.
Publishers?
My name's Alice Hastings. I work for Nirvana Press. Vanity publishing, I'm afraid. We publish the most terrible rubbish. Actually, though...
What?
I am looking for a writer for a book somebody wants written about a family. Quite a famous family, actually. The Winshaws.
Oh, you'd have to be a glutton for punishment to write about that lot.
Well, exactly. But I had hoped just from... But no, you wouldn't be interested. You're a proper writer. Although, this woman, this aunt or something, she's offering the most absurd money.
Well, I don't actually think, you know, at the moment, I mean, at the moment I'm in the middle of a very passionate, very, very sexy...
Affair?
No, novel. She got off at Kettering. I went on to Sheffield. When I got home, I set to work on my passionate, sexy novel. But the truth is, I'm not actually very good at writing sex scenes. He pulled her roughly towards the bed. He pulled her gently towards the bed. He pulled her in the rough direction of the...
Oh, God! You have reached the residence of Michael Pierce, novelist. He's either out or busy being inspired. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hello, Michael, it's your mum. Ring me, please.
She was wearing a thin muslin blouse, through which her nipples stood out like two cherries. Like two maraschino cherries. Like two glacé cherries? Like two glacier mints? Like two peas in a pod? Like three coins in a fountain? Like Victoria plums? Like Victoria Falls? Like a sore thumb? Oh, God! It was no use. Maybe if I watched the video. It was an old film called What a Carve-Up, starring Sidney James, Kenneth Connor and Shirley Eaton. At times of stress, of loneliness, of need, I would watch the scene.
Miss, you don't happen to know where my bedroom is, do you?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'll go now.
No, hang on. Turn your back a minute.
Kenneth turned and found himself staring into a mirror in which he could see his own reflection. And beyond that, Shirley's. Her back was to him, and she was wriggling out of her slip, pulling it over her head.
Just a minute, miss.
Kenneth hastily lowered the mirror to avoid seeing her reflection.
You're sweet.
She finished pulling her slip over her head and started to unfasten her bra.
Damn, damn, damn!
Hello.
Hello.
I'm not disturbing you, am I?
Not at all. No, I was just watching television.
Well, I know we don't know each other very well or anything, but I thought I might ask you a favour, if that's all right.
Sounds fine. Would you like to come in?
Thanks.
How can I help?
Well, it's like this.
I found myself trying to guess how old she was. Her face, and especially her eyes, still had that questioning, fresh, youthful quality. And I would have said that she was in her early 30s at most, but she had liver spots on the back of her hand, And I began to wonder if she wasn't nearer my age, or older, early 40s perhaps. And then I realised that she'd finished talking and was waiting for me to answer, and I hadn't heard a word she'd said.
Do you think you could run that by me again?
I hope you don't mind me saying this, Michael, but, are you feeling all right?
Can I ask you something? Who are you?
Sorry?
I don't know who you are.
I'm Fiona. I'm your neighbour. I just live across the hall. I introduced myself a few weeks ago. We pass on the stairs 3-4 times a week. You say hello. Shall I go?
No. Tell me what you've come about once more. We might get somewhere.
We did. She wanted sponsorship for a 40-mile bike ride for the local hospital. I gave it. She left. I switched on the video again.
You can turn round now.
Oh.
Shirley Eaton became...
Very provoking.
No, not Fiona.
Well,
Alice Hastings.
I suppose you must be rather scared.
If she hadn't, none of this would have happened.
Oh, really?
I forced myself to switch off while I was still aroused.
I have an idea.
Maybe I could carry this arousal into writing my sex scenes. The bulge in his trousers left her in no doubt as to his excitement. His intentions. His intentions. His endowment. His policy. The nature of his endowment. The extent of his manhood. The length of his extension. The extent of his full throbbing... Oh, God! I would go and see Alice in the morning. Writing anything, even the story of the monstrous Windshaws, would be better than this self-inflicted torment. As I waited in the drab, dreary, dingy, bookless foyer of the Nirvana Press in Vanity House, I found myself dreaming of sex with Alice.
Hortensia Tonks.
As I buried my face in her beautiful breasts, she pulled the shirt from my shapely...
I beg your pardon?
Hortensia Tonks.
Does she? Really?
No. I am Hortensia Tonks. It's Alice's day off.
Ah. Oh, if I accepted this commission that she suggested to write the biography of the Windshaw family, I would be working with her, would I?
The project is her baby. It was she who suggested you write it. It would be remarkably unfair on her if you weren't, wouldn't it?
Hortensia mentioned the sum this maiden aunt, this Tabitha Windshaw, was offering, and I had to stop my eyes from widening. She left the room to get a contract. It was all happening in such a rush. I ought to have welcomed Hortensia's return, but I hated her for not being Alice Hastings.
Your contract. And a little present, Michael, as a gesture of welcome to the Nirvana Press. 3 of this season's star publications.
Oh, thank you. Ah, yes. Great Plumbers of Albania. Thank you. 300 Years of Halitosis. Thank you. I can sense the sweet smell of success for that one.
And So You Think You Know About Plinths by the Reverend J. W. Pottage. Oh,
thank you.
And soon, Michael, surpassing them all, The Windshaws, A Story of Patriots and Power by Michael Pierce.
I began to research into the Windshaws. They seemed to infiltrate into all the dark corners of British public life. Henry Windshaw, politician. Hilary Windshaw, journalist. Thomas Windshaw, merchant banker. Rodney Windshaw, art guru. Mark Windshaw, arms dealer. It was daunting, but I have a natural talent for being daunted. I made myself some supper. I say made. I popped a portion of Brunwyn's bangers and mash, they're Brunwyn good, into the microwave. I rewound the tape in my video recorder. Pressed stop, took a mouthful of soggy sausage and pressed play. It was perfectly judged.
Miss, you don't happen to know where my bedroom is, do you?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Damn! 2 nights running. This was intolerable.
Hello again.
Hello.
Oh, God, what was her name? Fiona. Oh, thank God.
Fiona.
I brought you this.
Ah, thank you.
It's a cineraria.
Of course it is, yes, thank you.
I thought your flat needed cheering up.
Well, it does. It does, thank you.
Where do you think you put it?
Why don't you come in and help me decide?
Thank you. Oh, am I interrupting your meal?
Yes, thank you.
What?
It's horrible. Would you like a drink?
Ooh, I think orange juice, please. Can't seem to shake off this dreadful sore throat. Aren't you going to answer it?
No.
You have reached the residence of Michael Pierce, novelist. He's either out or busy being inspired. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hello, Michael. It's me, Mum. Ring me, please. Please, Michael.
Well, why didn't you speak to her? You aren't exactly being inspired at the moment, are you?
I must change that message.
Aren't you going to ring her?
No.
She made me feel more daunted than ever. I longed for Shirley Eaton and the mirror. I craved it.
You can't switch me off.
What?
You're pointing your remote control at me. You can't switch me off.
Was I? Sorry.
Goodbye, Michael.
There's no need to go.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry, I'll go now.
No, hang on. Turn your back a minute.
Fiona began calling on me almost every evening. She thought I was lonely. I didn't want her there. I wanted Alice Hastings there. I told her about my project. She brought a cyclamen. She brought a hibiscus. She brought an asparagus fern.
The flat's beginning to resemble Kew Gardens.
Oh, it needed something. It was so dead. Michael, I know this is none of my business, but I'd like to help you. And I've been thinking about the Winshaws.
Oh, God, have you?
You probably won't welcome my advice.
Probably not.
It was just a thought. Why don't you put an ad in the Times asking for information about the Winshaws?
Because I don't really want to do this job. Great idea, Fiona.
Maybe your best start would be to go to the family seat, Winshaw Towers. I mean, Mortimer Winshaw is the head of the family, and that's where he lives.
It was a 3-mile walk across the North York Moors from the bus stop. At last, the house came into view. Even in the bright sunshine of that late afternoon, it looked bleak, gaunt, arrogant. It resembled nothing more than a giant black hand, gnarled and deformed, its fingers clawing at the heavens as if to snatch down the setting sun. As I approached closer, I began to shiver uncontrollably. The entrance was exactly like the sinister haunted house in What a Carve-Up.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name's Michael Pierce. I'm a writer.
You have my commiseration, sir. Oh,
thank you. I'm commissioned to write a book about the Winshaws. I wonder if I could see Mr. Mortimer Winshaw.
I think it most unlikely, sir. But we mustn't give up hope, must we? Come into the Great Hall and make yourself comfortable. If you can.
But Mortimer Winshaw did agree to see me, and even invited me to dine and stay the night.
Thank you, pals.
It's saddle of curried hare, sir.
Yum, yum. This is very kind of you, sir.
Mortimer and I were at opposite ends of the dining table in the vast dining room. Impressive it was. Cosy it wasn't.
Not at all. I must make sure this book of yours gets off on the right note. The truth, Michael, about my awful family. The truth. Besides, it is a pleasant change to have company in this hateful house in which, as head of family, I'm now doomed to eke out my solitary, widowed existence.
I must say that it does feel a bit sinister.
It is. Here's, Michael. Tragedy has struck this house twice before.
Thank you, Pat.
Twice before?
In 1942 and 1961.
Yes, but what do you mean, twice before? It sounds...
Yes?
It sounds as if, you know, you expect a third tragedy.
I think it almost certain, don't you, Michael?
Later, in the vast, draughty, dusty drawing room over our port, Mortimer Winshaw told me of the tragic events of 1942.
Godfrey Winshaw was 33, Michael. He was the most handsome, the most dynamic, and the most prepossessing member of the whole family. One could have called him the white sheep of the family.
Very good.
He was a pilot. He was flying a top-secret mission over Berlin. The atmosphere in the house that night became uneasy. His sister Tabitha, who adored him, became particularly agitated. He didn't return. No bodies were recovered from the plane. Neither Godfrey nor his co-pilot was ever accorded the honor of a Christian burial. The news drove Tabitha out of her wits, where she remains to this day.
Oh, Lord. Does she indeed?
She's 81 now. Unfortunately, she fell into the grip of an extraordinary delusion.
Delusion?
Godfrey had been betrayed by my brother Lawrence. Tabitha claimed that she heard German voices in Lawrence's study. She claimed he was a Nazi spy. She burst into his office one day.
Before the tragedy?
Yes, before the tragedy. She claimed that Lawrence was transcribing secret instructions over the telephone. She grabbed a scrap of paper which she claimed to be evidence of his treachery. I have seen this scrap.
And?
It contained nothing more remarkable than a scribbled note to the butler, asking for a light supper to be sent to his room.
So Tabitha is mad?
Yes, and was confined to an asylum the very next day, from which she would not emerge for 19 years.
19 years? 1961?
1961, indeed. Death visited Winshaw Towers again that night. Yes, well, time for bed, I think.
Mortimer's tongue had been loosened by alcohol. If I lost this moment, he would never tell me what happened in 1961. Could I just have one more glass of this delicious port?
Well, perhaps we could have one more. You writers are all big drinkers. Hemingway.
Yeah, absolutely. Hemingway and me.
Another glass of port, sir.
Thank you. You were talking about 1961, sir.
The whole thing was being laid on specially for me, my 50th birthday. They even felt it was safe to let Tabitha out for the night. I didn't live here then, of course, and I hated coming here. Hated it. If my dear wife, Rebecca, hadn't been there, I don't think I could have borne it.
Darling, you're shivering.
I'm all of a flutter. I can hardly face them. I know something dreadful will happen.
If it's Tabitha you're worried about.
Not just Tabitha. But in any case, I don't think there'll be any trouble from that quarter. The doctors say that she's more or less back to normal. I heard the hollowness of my words, Michael, and I hated myself for it. Only that afternoon in the garden I had seen that she was not all right. I came across her, crouching in the shrubbery. She was mumbling to one of the bushes, whispering secrets to the buds.
Oh, Morty, I had no idea. I was just...
I didn't mean to surprise you, Tabs. It's just...
Not at all. I was out for a walk and I saw... I thought I'd explore. Heavens, what must you think of me? I'm mortified. I'm mortified in front of Morty.
Yes. Magnificent, isn't it, this garden? I don't know how they keep it so well. Oh, that jasmine. Just smell it. Oh, Michael, what a night that was. During that dreadful meal, Lawrence leaned across the table and asked me...
How do you reckon the old loony's bearing up?
If you're referring to Tabitha, Lawrence, then you will find that she is behaving herself perfectly, just as I said she would.
I saw you both having a bit of a chinwag this afternoon on the croquet lawn. You look rather serious, that's all. Wasn't anything up, was there?
No, of course not. We'd just been for a walk together. The gardens are looking magnificent, by the way, especially your jasmine. The scent was quite overpowering. We wouldn't mind learning your secret one of these days.
Sometimes I think you're as bats as she is, old boy. There is no jasmine in our garden. I can vouch for it. Not even a sprig. Ah, here comes the saddle of curried hair.
Saddle of curried hair? Quite a coincidence.
Not really. It's nearly always saddle of curried hair at Winshaw Towers. They toasted me, Michael.
Good health. Health and happiness.
Well, it has been a most pleasant evening. It's so nice to get out and about. You've no idea. Only I was thinking how nice it would have been if Godfrey could have been here tonight.
Quite so, Tabitha.
He much preferred Mortimer to Lawrence. I wonder why. I suppose it's because he knew that Mortimer had no intention of killing him. Well, it's time I was getting to bed. Upward Hill to Blanket Fair, Nanny used to say.
up the long and winding stairs, up the stairs to say my prayers. Do you still say your prayers, Lawrence? I should say them tonight if I were you.
And in the middle of the night, all hell broke loose. I shall never forget that cry, Michael. It was the sound of a man dying. An intruder had broken in through the library window, which was normally kept securely locked. He forced his way into Lawrence's bedroom, must have attacked Lawrence, who'd dealt him a fatal blow with a copper-headed back scratcher, which he always kept by his bedside. Death was instantaneous. The police were satisfied that Lawrence acted in self-defense. No charges were preferred against him.
That was the end of it?
Not quite. In the morning, Piles told me that Tabitha had a visitor with her. That alarmed me. I hurried to her room. I found no visitor. I just came to say goodbye, Tabitha.
Goodbye.
We must see more of each other in future. You'll come to visit us in London, perhaps?
I doubt it. They're going to blame me for what happened last night and put me away again. I've missed my chance now.
Missed your... Well, of course, there are some circumstances which take some accounting for. The library window, for instance. Piles swears that he locked it as usual, and yet this man, this intruder, whoever he was, doesn't seem to have forced it in any way. I don't suppose you happen to know anything?
Now look what you've made me do with your chatter. I've dropped a stitch.
Yes, well, I'll be off.
Have a nice journey.
Oh, by the way, who was your visitor?
Visitor?
Piles said that someone called on you a few minutes ago.
No, he was mistaken. Quite mistaken.
I see. Well, am I imagining this, or is there a peculiar smell in here?
It's jasmine. Isn't it lovely?
As soon as I got home, I set to work. Mortimer had told me a lot, but had left me with no answers, just more questions. Had Lawrence really betrayed Godfrey? Was Tabitha really mad? Why had an 81-year-old madwoman commissioned the book? What really happened in 1961? And why was there twice a mysterious smell of jasmine? I couldn't cope with all this. You've guessed it.
Miss, you don't happen to know where my bedroom is, do you?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'll go now.
No, hang on. Turn your back a minute.
As I watched, a strange thing happened. I saw not Shirley, not even Alice Hastings, but Fiona. I'd heard her dry, irritable cough from across the corridor. I didn't like the sound of it. Suddenly, I needed to see her.
Michael.
No, I've been really unfriendly. I've come to apologise.
Michael, it's the middle of the night.
There are some things you ought to know about me. Things I'd like to tell you.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, Michael, but it's 2:20.
No, I didn't mean now. I thought maybe over dinner.
When?
Tomorrow night.
Where?
The Mandarin, 9:00.
Are you asking me out?
No, I suppose I am.
You made a good choice here. Have you been here before?
No, I just read about it somewhere.
So, Michael, what are these revelations about yourself that you are bursting to tell me? I'm agog.
There are no revelations.
Well, last night, then, that was just a subtle way of getting to see me in my dressing gown, was it?
Well, it was just an impulse, that's all. It had only just occurred to me how strange my behaviour must seem. You know, the way I keep myself to myself, how I barely answer you sometimes. All that time I spend watching the video of what a carve-up. You must wonder what on earth's going on.
Not really. You're hiding from the world because it frightens you.
Good evening, sir. How nice you've come back after all this time. Your mother's well?
Yes. Very, very well, thank you.
Good. Enjoy your meal.
I did come here with my mother once. We had a terrible row and, well, it's not something I want to talk about.
I was promised revelations, and all I get is lies and evasions. When did you get divorced?
How did you know that?
It was on the cover of the book he showed me.
1974.
What was her name?
Verity. We were very young. We didn't know what we were doing.
Did you have children?
We were children. We didn't need to have them.
I didn't have children either. He had three daughters from his first marriage.
What, you've been married?
Oh, yeah. You're not the only ones who have screwed up on that. He was a manic depressive and a born-again Christian.
I don't know you very well, but I'd say he doesn't seem your type.
Oh, he was my type, all right. You see, unfortunately, I'm one of those people. I have a giving nature.
I'd noticed.
What, the way I've been showering you with pot plants?
The way you gave money to that beggar outside without his even asking for it.
I take pity on people. I took pity on my ex. He and his wife had been devout evangelicals, and they had these two kids, and she had an incredible job giving birth to the next one. The upshot was that she lost her religion with a vengeance and walked out on him, taking her three daughters, Faith, Hope and Brenda. Will you tell me why you won't speak with your mother?
I'll get the bill.
I think we're being followed. Stop.
I think you're right. Keep walking and stay close to me. We reached our porch. I'd hoped to offer Fiona a first tentative kiss, but the mood wasn't right. I couldn't get the door open.
Ah!
What?
He was out there. I could see his face in the bushes, and I recognised him.
Who was he?
I don't mean actually recognise him. I mean, I've seen that face before. I know I have.
Go inside. I'm going to settle this.
Michael, be careful.
Would Hemingway be careful? I hunted high and low. There was nobody there. Is this the bush where you saw him?
Yes.
Breathe in deeply.
That's odd. It's jasmine. There's no jasmine round here, is there?
What a Carve Up starred Robert Bathurst as Michael, with Fiona Allen as Fiona, Gus Brown as Lawrence, Flaminia Cinque as Hortensia, Charlie Higson as Mortimer, Geraldine McNulty as Michael's mum, Lucy Punch as Alice, and Jeff Rawl as Piles.